Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon. This is Marcello Rolando. I'm the Reasonable Voice, and this is the Reasonable Voices radio talk show. My guest today is film director David Stott. He both wrote and directed Coach of the Year, which is premiering Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. Now, we are pre-recording on Monday the 20th, but we want to wish David all the best anyway. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Marcello.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is neat, because as we were saying before we came on the air, our paths have almost crossed several
times.
Yes, evidently. I know I did something even at the Manhattan Theater Club, but I can't remember what. It's been so long ago. Anyway, let's talk about you. David is an award-winning director with 20 years of experience. He is a guest teaching artist at the Manhattan Theater Club in New York City, of course, a producer for the 48-hour film project, and he serves on the board of advisors for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill's Communication Studies Department. And I once auditioned at Chapel Hill Theater.
That's a great theater.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And you come to me, or we got introduced, because my old NBC Another World's boss, Linda Londra, who,
right.
And you worked also in New York in a theater where I had directed long before I knew Linda Londra. So it's just
amazing. Primary stages.
Yes. I'm wondering, talking about the film Coach of the Year, we should say that, so people know, David is an avid swimmer. So this is a good combo he's pulled here, because of his experience, 20 years of coaching experience, marrying that to his filmmaking talent to create his first narrative feature. And of course, again, it's Coach of the Year. It's fair to say it's a kids-friendly sports comedy, would you say?
Yes, absolutely.
And we said it's premiering in Richmond on the 21st. Oh, by the way, at the Byrd Theater, which is where Spielberg's Lincoln premiered, at least on the East Coast, and Lincoln is a film in which I appear. So we're meant to get together here, David.
I love it.
So tell me, what's up with No Pool, No Problem?
So the Coach of the Year is based on a true story. Uh-huh. When I coached in Richmond for a long time, first Summer League, Southampton Recreation Association, and then got an offer to coach at the collegiate school. And my first meeting with the then athletic director, Charlie McFall, he sat me down. He said, "Dave, I have a pool, but we think you can win states this year."
Hmm.
And I was like, "No pool?
Yeah.
No problem." I mean, I was like mid-20s. This was like a challenge accepted.
Sure.
I was happy to. He knew exactly what to say to get me fired up.
Exactly.
And, prove myself and all those things. So we yeah, we started the season with no pool, and we had a lot of help from the athletic department at Collegiate, and we put together a practice schedule. We were practicing at like 5 or 6 different locations every week, and you know, getting bused to all these different pools around, and you know, hitting the gym and free weights and dry land and anything we could think of to try and get the kids in shape in time. And as the season progressed, we had sort of people just heard about the swim team and heard what we were trying to do and thought it sounded really cool. And so we started the season with, I don't know how many swimmers, and had almost twice that many by the end of the season, because people were attracted to, you know, the challenge of it. So it was an awful lot of fun and an awful lot of work, and it seemed like the perfect subject matter for me to tackle. And as you said, my first feature, I've been a filmmaker for a long time. You know, I was making stupid movies about ninjas and secret agents and stuff like that.
Yes.
And I had a swim parent. They're like, your life is swimming. Why don't you make a movie about swimming? And I finally took that advice to heart. It was fantastic advice. And you know, it's been a long time coming. I probably spent 3 years on the script. Mm. When I was a coach, as you said, I coached for about 20 years. And anytime anyone said anything funny at practice for 20 years, I wrote it down.
Good
so
for you.
I had 20 years of material to shape the script from. And then, you know, we had to condense some things. I couldn't tell a 20-year story in the movie. So,
yes.
So we sort of took the greatest hits from my career and packed them all into one season for movie purposes. But yeah, pretty much everything that happens in the film actually happened to me or to a coach that I worked with. Yeah, it was just a great deal of fun. The sort of, in making the movie, we had the same outlook and attitude as we did during that season, which is,
sure,
we don't have a lot of resources, we don't have a lot of money, we don't have a lot of time, but we have some really great people and a really great energy surrounding this project or team, as it was back in the day. And that's kind of the atmosphere that we had on set, and in post-production. It's been a long haul. It's been a whirlwind. It's been a lot of fun. I made a lot of good friends along the way, and we had just tons of support from the swimming community here in Richmond. When we were filming, there was 1 or 2 days, I think we had 200 or 300 extras. It was probably closer to 200.
Wow.
And you know, that's just a massive undertaking, and frankly, it was a pretty stupid thing for me to do my first time. Like, you know, if you're a first time filmmaker, you know, you make a movie about,
keep it small.
Keep it small. 3 actors, 4 actors, do a rom com, shoot on, you know, the city streets of New York or something like that. Shoot in Brooklyn, where, you know, there's all this production value built. But no, I was like, nope, this is a story we need to tell. 200 extras. And let's make it happen. So my producing partner, when she read that, I had one line in the script, and it was something like, 1,000 swim fans go crazy. She was like, there's no way we can do this. What are you writing this for? You know what our budget is. And I was like, you know what? I think we can pull it off. And, you know, the professional reactions to the film have been really good so far. We had, at one point when we were doing music, was introduced to me. Her name was Nancy Allen, and Nancy was the music editor on a little film called Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
And through the grapevine, Nancy heard about our movie, saw a rough cut of it, and I was like, this is fantastic. I want to help you guys.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, Nancy, why do you want to do this? Like, there's no money. You know, you're used to working on things like Lord of the Rings. What do you want to mess around with our dinky little movie? And she's like, look, I think it's great. I think, you know, on a movie like Lord of the Rings, the director and the composer already know exactly what they want to do. I'm just kind of, you know, doing, you know, painting by numbers or something like that. With this, you know, I get to be creative with you guys, and that would be a lot of fun for me. So those kinds of people kept sort of coming out of the woodwork. You know, in any huge project, there are letdowns and setbacks. But then, you know, we also sort of had these unexpected windfalls that we never could have planned for and never could have expected. But because we were having a lot of fun doing it and trying to do a lot with a little, I think that was attractive to people.
Yes, yes. Ambitious, but, you know, it's like I was telling friends the other day who asked me, to direct something in over a weekend to direct this trailer for them because it had been requested from L.A. So, you know, I said, yeah, but over three, and when I say a weekend, I mean Friday night we read it, and then Saturday and Sunday we shot it. So, and I looked at them, and they were much like you when you started out as a swimming coach. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to tell them this is not possible because they think this is possible. And we did it. So
right.
There it is. Tell me, you know, I do a lot of voiceover work for Indie Film Minute, which really promotes independent filmmaking. And that's what this is. Share with us why you think the independent filmmaking process is so important.
Yeah, I think what's tremendous about indie filmmaking is the creative freedom that you have as a director or a, you know, as an actor, as a writer. It's kind of the sky's the limit in the creative process. Then what gets very difficult is I have this vision, or you know, I have this character I want to bring to life, or I have this script or this project I really really want to do, and then your resources are limited. So so the creativity, you can kind of do anything you want, but then you got to find a way to make it happen.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So the unfettered creativity, I think, is very important. I know I've heard some interviews with Joss Whedon, who did, you know, Avengers 2, and how it sounded like the movie almost killed him, not just because it was a huge budget and, you know, tons of stars in it and, you know, a very hotly anticipated title, but just because, you know, he would be about to shoot a scene and he would get notes from somebody, a studio head or an executive or, you know,
yes.
or something. Like, you have to shoehorn this agenda, you know, an agenda that has nothing to do with creativity, nothing to do with great storytelling, and it's just like, my actor needs more screen time, or where, you know, the studio's trying to set up the sequel, so you have to slip these lines of dialogue into the scene, and I guess the meddling from the people that are paying for everything is probably exhausting, and that's what it sounded to me like. He's got so much to do. It's so hard to make a great movie. It's so hard to do it, even when everyone is focused on just the story and just, you know, creating a great film that an audience will enjoy. And then that's what I found with our indie process. Anytime a secondary agenda was introduced, the story was about to suffer. But on the indie level, you get to resist that. You know, if there's not a lot of money involved, it's funny how many people aren't really interested in movies unless, you know, they're stars or big budgets.
Sure. Yes.
So if you're doing it because you love it, and absolutely everyone who worked on this film, you know, was working for peanuts, and so it was important to us to pay everybody as much as we could. But you know, honestly, they could make a lot more money working for Spielberg. Is the jobs they work for Spielberg, you know, maybe they don't have, like Nancy Allen, you know, they don't have quite the creative, you know, reign or latitude that we were able to provide. Because, you know, I would say my director of photography, Jim Ray, who's pretty well known in Richmond production community, he's just such a hard worker and, you know, he's got a great eye. And, you know, when I was talking with Jim, we had done a few shorts together. I said, Jim, how do you feel about DPing this movie? And he said, well, I'd love to. And I said, great, how would you feel about seeing it with no lights? A challenge accepted. And so there were a few scenes, you know, if there was a scene where just like two people talking, like we had time to light that. And
yes.
Jim did, again, a beautiful job with not a lot of resources. But we kept finding people that were like happy to step up to the plate and wanted the creative challenge, and I just don't know how often you see that on, you know, on big studio pictures.
Yes.
I've heard it once referred to as the money hose, right? So whenever there's a problem on a studio picture, they just wash the problem away with the money hose because they have that resource, and, you know, time is money, and they're trying to do things as quickly and efficiently as possible. But we didn't have a money hose, so how else can we creatively solve this problem? Or, you know, how can we make it look like there's 600 people in the stands when we only have 100 or 50, or as the week went on, you know, we had some extra attrition, which I completely understand. So we started the week with hundreds of extras, and by the end of the week, you know, there were like 20 people
that
had stuck it out, and we have to match what we shot earlier in the speak with, you know, with 20 people. So how, you know, and again, it's like, well, we have to do it, so let's find a way.
Yes.
And Jim was up for every challenge that we threw at him. So you find out really quickly on indie sets who you're going to work with next time.
Exactly.
And Jim, of course, is one of my partners in crime with this, so I hope we get to do it again.
I hope so, too, because it sounds like a really committed group. And as when I directed it, there often people will say things like, how are we going to do this? Or so-and-so is lost, or so and can't do it, or didn't sick, or whatever. And or locations. You can get to the location, and it's not exactly what they told you it was going to be. And, you know, you right. can't go, oh, well, we'll take a day off. You have to say, yeah. You have to look at it. You stand there, you look at it, you go, all right, how do I make this work? And then you make it work. And also, I think, too, I don't want to get too metaphysical, but I mean, when someone like you has the courage to, because you have some real, not necessarily filmatic goals, but some real motivation. I don't mean you don't have filmatic goals. I mean, you have a personal, a big picture motivation for doing Coach of the Year. And we're going to talk about that probably more in the second half. But it's for all of your passion about making a great movie, and that passion, I think, and that drive brought to you like a magnet people who could make a contribution, a serious contribution artistically to the film. But you also had other motivators. You are thinking about kids who never learned to swim. And I'm going to tell a quick story only because I want to let you talk about those personal motivations that drove you in the next segment. But I didn't learn to swim until I was an adult. And the reason I didn't is because my father had witnessed one of his best friends as a child drown. So he never wanted to go near water, and he didn't want us to go near water. So, but the reason I learned some many years later, I was dating a woman who had I think 6-year-old or 8-year-old daughter who loved to, when we'd go to Florida, she'd love to get up early and go swimming. So I said, well, okay, we can go, but you have to stay in the shallow part of the pool. And one day, I guess she just got so frustrated with that, and she looked at me and she said, you need to learn how to swim, Marcello, supposing something was to happen to me. What would you do?
Right.
And she taught me. She was like 8 years old. She taught me exactly what to do, and I did it. And, of course, then she could swim anywhere she wanted in the pool. And I wasn't an instant champion, but I knew how to swim. And it was an 8-year-old who taught me.
Right.
When we come back, I would like everyone stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and we're talking to writer-director David Stott. Am I pronouncing it correctly, David?
You are.
Okay. And he has combined his talents as a swimming coach and as a filmmaker, and he has written and directed Coach of the Year, which is premiering in Richmond at the Byrd Theater on Tuesday, July 21st. Which, as we speak, is tomorrow, but we are pre-recording. You will hear this after. And when David comes back, or we come back, we're going to hear about the Gather platform and about what drives him in addition to making a great film. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Asghar Farhadi is the Iranian filmmaker who brought us A Separation. His film, The Past, brings us the same kind of intricate human drama that arguably made A Separation into a classic. The Past opens with Marie meeting Ahmad at the airport in Paris. She sees him through the glass with love and joy in her eyes, like long-lost lovers together again at last. But Ahmad is coming only to grant Marie a divorce so she can marry her new love. To save money, he will be staying at her place, forcing Samir, her intended, to move out. Meanwhile, Samir's wife lies in the hospital in a coma. Lucy, Marie's daughter from a previous lover, is still fond of Ahmad, her former stepdad, but disdains Samir, and for good reason.
and Marie is allowing shallow choices to keep her own happiness at bay. Complicated?
You bet. Deliciously so.
Farhadi doesn't allow his characters or his plots to be any less complex than those we know in real life. The acting here is superb and the journey is rich and messy and so satisfying. The Past is another classic from this master of matching life's dramatic potential with its frustrating realities. The Past, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today is David Stott. Again, let us remind everyone, he is the writer-director of the film Coach of the Year, which is premiering in Richmond, Virginia, at the Byrd Theater on Tuesday, July 21st. And we hope people will be there and we'll see it and, you know, let us know how much you loved it. But David, you were born and raised, did you say, in Richmond, Virginia?
I was, yes, sir.
And moved to New York in 2002. And now back in the Richmond area making, or having made this this film, Coach of the Year. Did you come back because this is where you kind of started out as a coach, or because you just knew a lot of people, the resources, human resources?
Well, sure. There was some question when we knew we were going to shoot the movie, and my producer, for about 30 seconds, we considered shooting it in New York. Just because she was more familiar with the area. She knew lots of crew. We knew we were going to pull some actors, some New York actors. So for 10 seconds, we considered New York. And then it was quickly obvious to us when we saw sort of the scope of the logistical challenges that it had to be Richmond. It was the only place where we had enough friends to do it. It was the only place where there were enough pools, where we knew the people who were running the pools that would work with us. Also, when you shoot a movie in New York, no one is impressed by it. You know, they've seen it all. It's no big deal. If we shot in Richmond, you know, we were hoping it would be something that the community might think was cool. You know,
sure.
They might be willing to help us out. There might be some excitement around it if we did it here. And I grew up here and I coached here for a long time, so I still had strong ties to the swimming community. My father, interestingly, took over. I was coaching the collegiate team until 2002.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to New York, my dad stepped up and took over the coaching job. So he had been a big fan of the team and came to all the meets and knew all the kids. And
sure.
So when they were looking for a replacement, I was like, Dad, you got to interview for this because you know everybody already.
Yes.
And Dad had always been very involved with our swimming and swim teams he'd been very involved with the teams growing up, but
mm-hmm.
he had never coached before. So it was his first coaching job, and he immediately fell in love with it. And so he was still coaching at collegiate, and, it was just clear that this is where our friends were, this was home. So it made sense to shoot the movie here. Likewise, we considered premiering in New York or L.A. for, about a second and a half, and they were like, no, it's got to be in Richmond. Without the Richmond community, this never would have gotten done, so let's honor that and throw a party for our friends. So that's
sure.
what we're doing.
A pool party. Well, tell me, your choice to use crowdfunding, and explain to us, because I found this when I saw the short video explanation, the Gather platform, and you say it democratizes filmmaking, but you explain it to us. What is the Gather, GATHR, yes, platform?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what Gather does is Gather bridges the gap between theater chains like an AMC or a Lowe's and an independent filmmaker. So
mm-hmm.
Gather will go to theater chains and say, when is your theater empty? Is it booked solid 24/7? And the AMC will say, no, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday at 1 p.m. there's nobody in there. So Gather will take that information and then go to an independent filmmaker like myself and say, you can show your movie in this AMC multiplex theater. Does that sound good to you? And the filmmaker's like, amazing, that's great. I'd never get in that theater on my own.
Yes.
And they say, okay, well, if you can pre-sell 60 or 80 tickets, say, to a 4:30 screening on Tuesday, it's all yours. So Gather sort of bridges that gap between an indie filmmaker and a theater fan. So it's an opportunity to get your movie anywhere there's an audience for it. So, so we're looking to identify movie captains, is what we call them, nationwide, who are interested in hosting a screening. And so they get in touch with us, and we show them what theaters, or Gather shows them what theaters in their area are available for a screening. And our hope is that, you know, coaches or swim team parents will get excited about the film and decide to take the whole team, you know, as a team event or a fundraiser, or we're describing it as the perfect film to see 2 days before your championship meet, like as a team in a theater. It's like a perfect team building event. So we're really excited with how it turned out, and Gather has been instrumental in helping us get the film out, you know, in a sort of non-traditional way.
That is a fantastic story, and again, talk about creative imagination. That is fabulous, pulling all the pieces together and realizing that, you know, it's the old United We Stand. You don't have to go to Big Brother for everything. But maybe that's a word. But
right.
You know what I mean. It is that. It's the little guys getting together and finding some of the medium-sized guys who, you know, give you a break. And, you know, the Bird Theater in Richmond is full of history. It's an historic site.
Absolutely.
A beautiful, beautiful old theater. But let's get to, because something I really want to talk about is what's one of the things that motivates you about making a film like this. And I'm imagining it motivated you as a coach for kids, a swimming coach for kids. And that is the fact that many children, especially minorities, and I must admit I never thought of this, but many children and minorities in particular don't learn to swim. And of course, as you know, I'm sure, that can be a life or death thing, like what my father experienced. But tell us about that. What is it about the children that motivated the making of this film, Coach of the Year?
Sure. So one of the things we like to say about swimming is it's the one sport that can save your life.
Yes.
Right. So if you know how to swim, like you said, that can make the difference in a life or death situation. So, yeah, so there were two things that were motivating me besides wanting to tell a great story. And one was the swim team for me growing up had just been such a super unadulterated joy.
Mm-hmm.
And the team I had been on and the coaches that I had and the older swimmers that I had looked up to and then the younger swimmers who had looked up to me for no reason I could fathom. just growing up with sort of my summer family, which was Southampton Recreation Association, it was just a sort of a purely wonderful thing, and then I had experienced nothing else in my life that had been sort of that great, and I had seen so many kids just blossom in that environment. And the movie is about this a little bit. Is, you know, there's a character, his name is Owen Burns in the film, and he comes to the team with zero confidence, and you know, very quiet, very shy, and the way that he blooms throughout the season is kind of remarkable. So I thought, and when I went from just being a swimmer on the team to a coach on the team, I thought, we have one job, and that is to say something positive to each kid.
Yes.
At every practice.
Yes.
And there were 200 kids on that team and four coaches, so that was like a tough goal for us to reach every single day, but I thought we could do it, and we had good success with it. So, it was, you know, we just made it as much fun as possible for the kids that, you know, were going to spend 10 weeks in the summer with us, and we wanted them to have a great time, and that would usually translate to competitive success, though that was sort of secondary for us. Anyway, so I felt like, why is there no movie about this? Like, it's the greatest, most underrated sport in America, and so many people, you know, I think it's like 26 million registered swimmers internationally with FINA, and there are like 400,000 swimmers registered in this country with USA Swimming, and I was like, you know, there's an audience for this, and I know if you've ever been at a championship swim meet that's close, like, it's louder than a rock concert.
Yes.
And there's, you know, this tangible excitement. And I was like, I've never seen this portrayed on film. We gotta try and do this. So that, because it had been such a fantastic experience for me, I was like, all right, we want to pass that on. And then as we got farther into it, there's numerous anti-drowning campaigns. I know one of them's run by USA Swimming.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called the Make a Splash Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and it's just a shame not only that people can die from not knowing how to swim, but, you know, they're missing out on, you know, what could be a life-changing experience,
yes,
as it is for Owen Burns in the movie. And it's just such a great thing. And, you know, kids are doing great things. But, I would say with the anti-drowning, as you said, I think your experience is not atypical. I think people often don't learn to swim when their parents are afraid of the water.
Yes.
And the parents, you know, that's a reasonable reaction. You know, mm-hmm, you witness a drowning, you're like, okay, I'm going to keep my kids safe. I'm going to keep them away from the water.
Yes.
What the message we try to get out is it's actually safer if you introduce them to the water,
yes,
early,
yes,
and teach them so they know how to float, they know how to swim. You know, knowledge is power, right?
Yes.
So that's kind of what we're going for there.
That is so grand, David, and I hear your passion and your sincerity in that. It's to be able to, first of all, to be able to bring something to a child who would not necessarily otherwise get it, and it's a quality education, and at the same time, it's quality education about something that could save their life, and on top of all of that, the opportunity to say something positive to a child every time you see them, and have terrific fun. I mean, I love, and now I've reached a point where what I love is running, literally running in the swimming pool, and racing. My doctors, when I thought of my doctor, said that's a great exercise, and I love it. You know, as you say, it's so much fun. The water, you know, we come from water anyway. But this is fabulous. Now, what's your hope for a movie like Coach of the Year? You are, I think you've touched on this, but you want to spread the awareness of the importance of learning how to swim. But what, in addition, is so important about being a part of a team sport for a child in particular?
Yeah, well, it's like I said, the team, a good team, a well-coached team, a positive team can be absolutely transformative for a child. And we've seen that in my coaching experiences. I've seen the transformation happen for a child. You know, sometimes it takes a season. You know, mm-hmm, in 10 weeks the transformation can come. Sometimes, you know, I swam at Southampton from the time I was 7 till the time I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, the transformation takes longer, or, you know, is deeper or more meaningful or something like, you know, the longer that you stay with the team. And it's just it's sort of like an extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the quality of your education or the quality of the lessons that you're learning, you know, depends on the quality of your coaches and the quality and character of the other people around you.
Mm-hmm.
But you get the right team and the right coach and the right kid together, and it changes lives.
Yes.
I really believe that.
I was going to say, it's life-changing. There's no question.
What, yeah.
You mentioned an associate producer. Tell us a bit about her, Christina, I think, yes?
Yeah, so Christina is an associate producer. She came on relatively recently. She's sort of our social media genius.
Uh-huh.
I've been spending a lot of time trying to get the movie finished and ready for tomorrow, and it,
yes,
is, I'm happy to say, but that's been all-consuming. I think I got 3 hours of sleep this week.
Yes.
So Christina has been able to manage quite ably, you know, the Facebook presence and reminding people what we're about and what we're up to and why swimming is important. And so she's been a great help. I have to tell you that the most helpful person through this entire process has been dear old mom. And mom's contributions are too numerous to list here, but I will give a snapshot for you. During filming, which was 3 weeks, so 18 days, mom had 11 strangers living in her basement. She fed a crew of 40 three meals a day.
Oh, my heavens.
And and about halfway through the shoot, she came to me and my other producing partner, Melissa, and she said, I need you to know something. And we're like, you know, we have a meeting, we have to go. She's like, stop. You need to hear this. I don't have any more friends. I don't have any more money. I don't have any more beds. I don't have any more time. I don't have any more energy. Stop asking me for things. I will do what I told you I would do, but you can't keep heaping new things on me. And we said, Mom, that's great. We need $20,000. She almost disowned me. We sorted it out, and there was a loan, and that loan has since been repaid. I'm happy to report.
Yes.
But Mom was just a total, utter trooper. Elizabeth Stott, I love you.
Yes, yes.
And without her help, we never would have gotten it done. There were hundreds of people that assisted us, but Mom was really went above and beyond. And her friends still remind me. They're like, you know what your mother did for you, right? Like, she lost 10 pounds.
Yeah.
I do know. But in a way, I kind of don't know, because she was doing so many things and trying to keep the pressure off me, and, you know, so I could focus on making the movie, and she was taking care of logistics. And,
sure.
Yeah, you can't do it without your friends and family.
That's right.
That's my experience.
And moms are the best. And I have to tell you, for people who are not used to making movies, you know, you say, yes, I'll help you out, but they don't really know what they're saying yes to. And your mother obviously learned as she went and went beyond the call of duty, matched everything and more that you needed, and learned all of that as she was going. It's a huge, I mean, usually, as you know, they're huge. There's a huge crew just to feed people.
Right.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about how. Let's give some website and contact information so people know how to see the film and buy a ticket. And whatever they need to do to reach out to you and be supportive.
Sure. So we're at www.coachoftheyearmovie.com, and that's got all the ticket information. If you'd like to be a movie captain and host a gather screening, all the information about how to do that is right there on the website. If you would like to buy caps and goggles and movie gear, we have some things for sale. We have two screens in Richmond right now. One is Tuesday the 21st. And then the following Tuesday, at the 28th, we'll have an encore presentation at the Bird Theater also.
Uh-huh.
And, you can sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to let you know what the future of the film holds. We have a distribution consultant who's helping us try to get the film on TV.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps pursue a more traditional theatrical release once our theatrical on-demand window is done. And
sure.
We'll have DVDs and digital downloads in time for the holidays.
Okay, and you know, it. From what I've seen of it, it's not that there's anything wrong with after-school specials. I've done them, but this goes beyond that, I think. It really is a narrative feature film, and it really does change lives, as you've said. Saves lives, yes, but it touches lives, you know. Children are our infrastructure, as I'm fond of saying. And when we realize that and realize we need to be listen to them with more than our ears, we need to have communication that allows them to speak to us in the many ways that children speak to us. The children carry around a great deal. Why don't we, again, slowly, give that website that has all the information so people can buy tickets, get the newsletter, and be of support.
Sure. The website is www.coachoftheyearmovie.com.
And there are two premieres, you say, Tuesday, go.
Yes, two premieres, or two screenings.
Yes.
Tuesday, July 21st, and Tuesday, July 28th, both at 7 o'clock at the Bird Theater.
Okay, excellent. Any parting words for us, David? Anything you think words of wisdom or things we need to know about the film, or you or the kids? How about
sure,
the cast?
I would say, first and foremost, the film is a family entertainment. And we make movies to entertain people and to entertain audiences. And I really think that people will love the movie based on that alone. And if you happen to be a swimmer, you might enjoy it a little bit more. But it's really for anyone who loves an underdog story.
Sure, yes. And the human story in it. That's what I love, is that the kids brought together, screaming with joy at their own accomplishment, and what that means. You see the journey. I mean, it's just it's a human story. It's a beautiful story. It's a family story. It's a coming of age story. It's all of those things, David. It's just fabulous. And two screenings, Richmond, Virginia, the Bird Theater, Tuesday, July 21st, and Tuesday, July 28th. And did you say both screenings were 7 p.m.?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you so much, David, for being on the show. It's been an absolute delight. I can't wait to see all of the film. And, you know, my hat off to your guts. A lot of people helped you. I know, Nancy, you have great cast. Some faces we'll recognize, by the way. And, of course, your mom and dad. But my hat off also to the guts it takes to be an indie film maker and to say, you know, to come from New York and come back to Richmond. I made a similar trip too, but to come back and say, I'm going to do this in this area, with this area, for this area, and come up with something so inspiring. That's the word I've been looking for. Thank you, David. And
thank you so much. All
the best to you and all those dear to you and everyone working with you, and I'm sure it's going to be a great success.
Well, thank you so much. If you'd like to attend either of the screenings, we'd love to have you.
All right, I will do that. I'll let you know. Okay. Thank you, David. You take care.
Thanks much, y'all.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Andy Film Minute. The era of hand-drawn animation for film has largely passed, replaced mostly by computers generating sophisticated imagery. However, watching The Triplets of Belleville, one cannot help but wonder, when the foundation of animation is bits and bytes, could something be lost? Here's the story. A grandmother raises her orphan grandson who finds passion in his bike. Grandma becomes his trainer, aiming to win the Tour de France. But during a race, he gets kidnapped. Grandma and trusty dog give chase, aided by ancient jazz performing sisters known as, you got it, the Triplets of Belleville. The plot, however, is but palette around which swirls a funny, totally original, often cringeworthy delight, and all with next to no dialogue. When Grandma has a blowout, her dog fills in for a tire. Joined by the poverty-stricken triplets, everyone eats frogs, harvested by hand grenade. But we'll stop there. Every moment brings surprising detail. There are simply too many fully realized avant-garde elements for us to share. Just know that when you are looking for the satisfaction of unique entertainment, The Triplets of Belleville may be just the ticket. Trust us, you will find this favorite hard to describe. The Triplets of Belleville. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Slow down, I'm conservative. Time was we could anchor our faith to our wars as flashpoint benchmarks, spotlighting our transitions, glorified with cheering parades and flags waving in the brilliant sun, even as death, like a pied piper, diminished our rainbow. Still, since gun violence slayed 9 black civilians in Charleston and 5 white military personnel in Chattanooga, a Tea Party member and emulating disciple of Hitler, who thought women should be silent in church, except for Westboro Baptist Church membership crying out sexual slurs that would make a Kenyan president stand in ovation, shot to death 2, wounding 9, in a Louisiana movie theater in the state governed by the NRA's number one choice for guns rule in the White House. And, in an act of Citrus, Florida road rage, 51-year-old white Robert Doyle in jail for shooting to death 44-year-old Hispanic Candelario Gonzalez in front of his wife and children.
It seems death no longer waits for us to catch up with the need for reasonable background checks or the realization that, racially, some are still in the midst of an uncivil war, employing sneak attacks and killing too fast for the media droned to keep score. Nor will death compromise with All Lives Matter without our first acknowledging, even before 1776, darker-skinned lives mattered far less to far too many, especially when, even now, Windows 10's edited TV ad predicting a great future features only white babies. Still think Atticus Finch is the problem? Donald Trump the hero? Fathers teaching their sons how to be snipers the solution? President Uhuru Kenyatta scoffs at gay rights, proclaiming human rights is really a non-issue in Kenya, while standing next to Kenya's favorite son, the man John Russell Hauser of Phoenix City, Alabama, hated most, Barack Obama. Still can't see our reflection in Kenyatta and Hauser? Well, behold, the pale horse comes also for haters, domestic terrorists, bullies, voter ignorance, rapists, arrogant, bigoted political leaders, and trumped-up self-promoting loudmouths. As I personally know Americans involved in special ops, I only recently managed to watch American Sniper, the biopic about Chris Kyle. Coincidentally, in the same week I inhaled the 6 CDs of Harper Lee's Go Set a Watchman. Having experienced the reaction to the former and anticipation of the latter, I fear we're not sensing their connection to our national essence, the truth about ourselves. My Uncle Gino taught me how to shoot with deadly accuracy well before boot camp, but he also taught me not to succumb to the thrill of the kill. Arguably, many American lives would have been lost without the sights and trigger finger of Chris Kyle. But if fewer adults of all nationalities, ethnicities, and religious beliefs taught fewer children that guns are the solution, maybe to more lives would matter. Truly, all colors, shapes, and life preferences matter. All deserve more than a Johnny-come-lately NRA governor's hypocritical prayer request. All deserve more than flag-waving-inspired war. Only 2 opposing points of view are needed to make war a perpetual success for conservative corporatism, conservative politicians, and nonpartisan morticians. Southerners are the only Americans the American government admits ever lost a war. But despite dwindling support and symbols, their war against Northern aggression wages on. I'm not suggesting America slow down to a conservative tempo to allow the right to catch up with our 21st century transformation. But is it not possible we can appreciate what's gone with the wind while we go set a watchman for those who gerrymander our electoral process or abuse their uniformed power to protect? Perhaps then we can spare a mockingbird with a civil, "Hey, boo." Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.